Start the recorder. I'm assuming we got you guys' microphones on. Yes, I can hear you all breathing.
Okay.
Let me start the music. That it? All right, hold on. We're going live now.
Fish, fish, fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
Yeah. Always going fish, fish, fishing. You need a hook, sinker, and line. And you got Fish and Frank here in the chair. You got Robert in the chair across from me. And this is the show without a name. It's Fish and Frank's. That's about what we got here. And we're on WKDW Radio 97.5 FM, real community radio right here in Northport, Florida, broadcasting to the world on KDWRadio.com and locally from Punta Gorda up through Venice, Englewood, and to our friends in the agricultural areas out towards the east. You know, you got to go east to get agricultural from here.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Just give me an idea.
Everyone else wants to build on the water.
Yeah.
One time it used to be agricultural on this end, but they kind of chased them out.
Yeah, I remember Murdoch's Ranch. That's how the Murdoch area got its name, when old Murdoch's Cattle Ranch was still there, and the big horses at the gate and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
there was a lot of stuff here back then. Arcadia was the center of the universe back then, and 1850, they started the Liverpool mines up on the Peace River, and then everything just went kind of crazy from there. People started leaving Punta Gorda, going out to Liverpool. There was a couple thousand people out there at one point working the Liverpool mines.
Right, which is right there off the Peace River.
Yeah, it's right on the Peace River. Go to fishandfranks.com, click maps of where to go fishing, and it's listed on one of the boat-only spots there. Got all the maps. I got some history, some cool pictures of what it looked like back, way back in the 1800s, early 1900s.
So, pretty cool.
Let's see. We're going to tell you about fishing right now. That's what we're here to do, so that's what we're going to do. All right, we got fishing. Robert, what kind of, what's the most prevalent fish out there right now?
Honestly, there's a lot of different fish going on. It's just the main place is kind of where most of your better fishing is, down along the intercoastal and the beaches and the southern end of the harbor. And then you can kind of pick and choose what you really want to specify from there.
I keep hearing one of the best spots is out in front of Bull and Turtle Bay, kind of from the Cape Hayes Sandbar all the way over to Devilfish Key. If you've got a boat, and the nice part about it is you can use an offshore boat there, a flats boat, whatever you want. And there's pompano and redfish and snook and a couple of sharks and flounder and Spanish mackerel and all kinds of stuff out there.
Yeah, about the only thing I disagree with is the redfish. The redfish have been tough for everybody last week from what I've been hearing. But all those other fish, definitely accurate.
I don't know about tough, but I'm going to say redfish are still causing me to have a exercise in futility, humiliation, and humbling experience with it. Had a great trip. I got to tell you, there's something really cool about going through the Myakka Cutoff. It's transports you almost to like a different world in the Myakka Cutoff. One end opens up on Charlotte Harbor right at the top of the harbor. Then you kind of wind through a whole bunch of islands and everything else, and you come out over on the Myakka River. And took tea up there, and her and I, we were up there. I got to tell you, we go through, and what really freaked me out, one of my absolute favorite spots to fish was on very, very low water, right at the mouth, the entrance going into the Myakka Cutoff, because
it was on the Peace River side.
On the Peace River side, yep, and on the south end. And you could go up there, and on very low tides in the winter, there'd be 6-8 inches of water. And I can remember actually pushing the boat to get up there. And then there was this beautiful hole. It's about 60 feet long, 6-8 foot deep, about 20 to 30 feet wide, depending on where you add on it. And I would put the boat over on the side, take the anchors, walk them out, set them on the sandbar, and then just start fishing that hole. And it was literally fishing in a barrel, because there was no water for the fish to get out unless they were willing to swim through 4 to 6 inches of water.
And at that point, it's a small enough fish, you don't want to mess with it.
Yeah, and you could literally cast in there, catch fish. It was trout. There'd be a few snook in there, Spanish mackerel. There was all kinds of fish in there. And my hole is gone. I was so, I come in there, and I was used to years ago. Now, mind you, I had not been in the cutoff for 2 years. So when I'm going in a spot I haven't been to for 2 years, I idle in. Right. As soon as it gets, 3 feet deep, 2 feet deep, shut down, dead slow, idle in to make sure the bottom features are the way they were before, and then I remember them correctly. But years ago, I would, go flying in there on super low tides, knowing I could set my boat down in that deep water and not be aground. Well, if I had tried that trick, I would have been aground, because it's just 2.5 feet of water all the way across side to side.
So the hole is filled in with sand.
The hole filled in somehow. And that's the first major bottom feature change that I've seen since I started fishing Charlotte Harbor in 1980. And I didn't move here till 79. I started fishing in 80. And for all the hurricanes and the storms and the flooding in June of 1995, we had 18 inches of rain in 2 hours. I mean, there was massive flooding. And this was the first time anything that big changed.
Right.
And I mean,
there's a lot of different possibilities of why.
I really don't know. I'm thinking it could be... I think it was a combination of Hurricane Irma, the flooding. Now, I was up in Shell Creek, and there's a log stuck in a tree that's 8 feet above the water. And this log is sitting there. It's a big hollowed-out palm tree log, and it's 8 feet off the surface of the water, lodged sideways in the tree. I took a picture of it. It's really cool to see. So it was 8 feet of extra water in over flood stage on Shell Creek. Prairie Creek running the same way. The Peace River was 11 or 12 feet above flood stage. Micah River, 8 to 10 feet above flood stage. All these rivers coming, pouring down, and then Irma's winds decided it was going to blow all the water out of the harbor. That was a massive amount of water to exit the harbor, considering the flood stage of all the rivers. Just the rivers alone should have been able to keep the harbor full.
Right, with as flooded as they were.
And we still lost 6 feet of water in the harbor. So picture that amount of water leaving that
and
quickly.
And only in a couple of hours, no less.
Yeah. So I think that's what filled that in. It just, so much water was moving. I was up in the Peace River, and in Peace River and on Shell Creek, and I'm tapping the bottom with my sticket pin, and there's very little muck. If there's muck, it's pretty hard, caked on surface muck. There's not the silt. Silt's the word I'm looking for. Usually the stuff that you rub on the bottom, you see this cloud of little particles come up, dust, underwater dust, so to speak. And that's gone. So, and I think what started me thinking about it was seeing how much brown water there was in the harbor, but it wasn't murky or muddy. It was just brown, but it was really very clear.
Yeah.
Very little sediment in the water.
Actually had some visibility to it.
Yeah, if it would have been, outside of the tannic color, which that color is derived from the leaves, right?
Yeah, you get the oak trees, pine needles, and mangrove leaves create, as they break down, they leach out their acid.
So it's like tea when you drink a cup of tea.
Correct.
It's the same... acids that turn tea brown turn the water brown here from the leaves.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, but just a lot of strange stuff. But going into the cutoff, we went in, we fished the first little bit. You kind of go through the mouth. You stay about two-thirds of the way to the left. You're going in dead slow idle, guys. It's if you know where you're going, do whatever you want to do. But if you don't know where you're going, dead slow idle. Go on up in, you're going to see an entrance on your left that's a very shallow tidal pool, almost never a fish in there. It's very black bottom, mucky, foot and a half deep, just too hot. It won't hold oxygen. So there's almost never fish there. But just past that, you'll see a little indent in the mangroves. Now, it's pretty shallow up by the trees. You're going to have maybe a foot of water, which is redfish will hang out in that, so will snook. But as it comes out about 10 feet from the mangroves, it goes down to a trough that's about 4.5 to 6 foot deep, depending on where in the trough you are. And the rest of the surrounding water is all about 2.5 to 3 foot. So you've got a nice trough sitting over there on that side, just off the mangroves. It's real easy to find because you're going to go in, you're going to see the opening, you're going through, you're going to see where the mangroves recess in, and then it's a long wall. And right out in front of that. Now, in order to fish that properly, stay back about 30, maybe 40 feet off the trees. This long, long cast, because you want to be casting at the mangroves. But if your boat's sitting in that hole or in that trough, you're too close, you're not going to catch fish. If the crab traps are there, stay outside of the crab traps. That's the easiest way to do it. But first time in there, you're going to have to go in, idle, go through the hole, idle back out, anchor up, and then get quiet for a while. But if you're sitting in that trough, you're going to shut down the flow of fish. You're not going to catch anything. Got a little redfish off there, nothing too exciting. Went up to the next opening, went in there, didn't get a bite. Tons of mullet. I mean, the whole thing was full of mullet. And then going on up, we ended up stopping. We caught a couple little snapper right at the, when you get through the S-curves or the narrows, right where it tees off. Stopped right there, and we're casting against the mangroves, the ones you'd be looking at as you come through there, and nothing too much. So we headed out, bypassed the Triple Lakes entrance, and ended up going into the elbow up at the end on the bend. And we sit down, we anchor up, get ready, we start fishing. We got shrimp, and we're just free lining. Terry's using a 4-aught hook, a little bit bigger shrimp than I was. She was using like select size. I was using more the regular size shrimp. With a number one hook, and she casts up there. She gets this big redfish. I mean, it's pulling, it's taking around the boat. I gotta lift the rods up over the holders. It takes her all the way around the other side of the boat, and she finally gets it in, and it's a solid 27. It might have been, it was to the point I didn't think I should keep it. It was almost a little bit too big,
right at that borderline size.
Right now, here's the question, and RJ, maybe you can answer this. I got 4 redfish that were 14 inches, maybe 16. Now, does that count the same as one 27-inch redfish?
I'm not good at math, so I would say if you laid them end to end.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'm trying to look for justification. I caught like 4 little ones. She got the one big one. She did get a smaller one and some sheephead. But I definitely.
I'm assuming by that we shouldn't be doing that.
Well, he's just trying to prove that he caught more fish.
That's right. Yeah.
Trumps his.
Mm. Well, you know.
Are we counting fish or are we counting keepers?
I don't know. Well, hey, now wait a minute. Hers was too big. Couldn't keep
Maybe.
It.
Maybe.
Well, it was close enough. I didn't feel comfortable with it. Can you imagine Fish and Frank in the newspaper? Illegal fish.
Exactly.
Oh, no. That ain't going to happen. Yeah, no. But I still think I should get some points for, you know, she caught one big one and one small one. I caught, you know, 4 or 5, well, modest redfish, we'll say. Modest.
Well, you helped her land it.
Yeah, I did help her land it. I should get what do they call that? An assist
Brownie
point?
Brownie points?
Yeah. Assist points. You know, or, you know, somebody passes it and they grab it. God, you
Is
can
that
tell.
Baseball?
I don't know. I get home. I go out and see how many home runs you can get in a football game. I don't know. All right. Anyway, we were talking about out there. The end of my cutoff right now, I can guarantee you there's a lot of small sheephead, a lot of small mangrove snappers, small redfish, and a few big ones. Terry proved that. I did not prove it. So anyway, east side of the harbor still loaded up with trout over there.
A little bit. This week's been weird. I know you've been busy working at the house, so you've been out for just a couple days, and a lot's changed in the last several days. These coming off of this full moon and some bizarre tides. A lot of guys are kind of
Now, why is
heads.
It tides bizarre? They were like spiky hair and wearing, you know, short skirts and steel things through their body.
That's not really bizarre. That's kind of attractive, actually.
God. You can tell there's a difference in the age here, folks. Yeah. Put a ring through your nose. It looks so good. You know, what's that thing hanging off that? No, never mind. That's that just the ball on
comes
the...
with their own lures.
Yeah, girls come with their own lures now, yeah. I don't know. Everybody looks at me and they think I'm, you know, I have no tattoos. Around. I have no piercings. Mm-hmm. Nothing. I'm probably the most boring, you know.
It's actually pretty smart.
I don't know. The only thing I ever found in a tattoo that I probably would have liked that I liked when I was, like, say, 16, 18, that I still like now, I don't want on my arm. You know? Right. There's a whole reason for, you know.
Right.
So.
But no, the fishing.
I could have put a guitar on there though.
Yeah. See,
could have put a fishing pole on there.
Fishing pole or guitar. Absolutely.
Put a fishing pole or guitar on there. So I guess there's three things. All right. So anyway, what were you saying?
The fishing.
Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
You still remember? You got it now, Pat.
Yeah.
What you betting on this, RJ?
Oh, I am. Yeah. I am.
Okay. All right.
You know, the tides have been really a little on the funky side. Plus that full coming off that full moon. We had that really good cold snap that dropped the temperature down, but it came right back up. You know, so the trout have kind of disappeared. A lot of the crab traps have moved off of the east side, which I think was holding some of those trout there.
Yeah, it's a lot of food.
You know, so I'm hearing very little of big trout or even smaller trout down there. Most of them are further south, basically from Pirate Harbor south, Cape Hayes south. And along the intercoastal is where the most consistent and most varieties of fish are at. Everything above that, one guy will do good, five guys will do terrible.
I guess, okay.
It's funky. The only weird part that is consistent that I'm hearing about is pompano scattered literally all over the place. Better concentration still south. But yesterday when Carl and I took the FWC out, we ran up the same route you and I did when we took my mother out running along Colony Point and then over towards the 41 Bridge.
Right.
That whole flat from Pirate Harbor up to Fisherman's Village, we saw pompano jumping in the wake. We spooked pompano at various locations all along there. We saw a couple redfish cruising those flats. You know, the fishing...
All right, wait a minute. You went out with FWC and mm-hmm. Betty Stogler from Sea Grant, right?
Correct.
And what were you guys doing in the boat with FWC? Did they have handcuffs on you? Was this like they finally found you?
No.
No?
I let go of my fish, too, if I think they're oversized.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine. All right. So it was you, Captain Carl.
I don't want to have the same headline as you either.
Yeah. Well, at least you're lucky. It's Robert. There could be others. You know?
Neither one of us want that.
All right. But you went out with FWC. You're on Captain Carl KB Backcountry's boat.
Correct.
What was the idea behind the trip?
Right now there's been a lot of stories going around about Goliath Grouper potentially opening or whatever.
Oh yeah, that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. I go sit through this meeting and they're talking about we're going to open season on Goliath Grouper and we're going to do this and should we do that? It was about 100 tags.
No, well, 100 tags. These were all suggestions. These
yeah, but the whole thing, they weren't going to allow more than 100 kept over the course of a year. That's right. Literally nothing. They should have said, listen, we're going to do a study. Let everybody by the county put in a lottery, and you catch two, you got to save the carcass for FWC. That was simple. They're talking about $100 a tag or $300 a tag, which would bring them in anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000. They've probably already spent two, three times that just asking people if they should do it. What would have been wrong with just saying, okay, we're going to do a study. Here, everybody, you know, if you want a tag, go keep a couple grouper, but you got to save us the carcass. They were simple, easy, 100 fish? Makes no difference.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I didn't get that from them, so.
You didn't get what from them?
That it was just 100 tags.
That's what they said.
Potentially, they're just trying to come up with hypotheticals. That was all, like, just thoughts and ideas.
Well, I hypothetically think they're a bunch of nutcases. I mean, well, Jiminy crickets. Do you go to college to get that dumb? On 100 fish doesn't matter at all in a field of jewfish. So
in a field of any fish, but
But you know, now, if you go through, you guys did go out, and what was your goal going out? One of the reasons why they can't open or close seasons on them is because there's no research. They know nothing about the Goliath grouper, really.
Yeah, well, the last research done on them, really, in any extent, was in the early 80s, and then shortly thereafter, they had to put them on the threatened or special concern list because we had pretty much decimated the population to the point of almost extinction.
Right. They were. They knew there was not a lot of them there.
Right.
So
there's no but animals.
In order to open them, they need
willy-nilly go out and harvest animals to study them. If they're almost extinct, you got to at least have somewhat of a sustainable population.
Now what they're doing now is putting tracking tags in. Did you guys catch any fish to do tags?
Yeah, we caught one. We caught one little one. The biggest thing is they want little ones right now. Big ones are very easy to catch, and they kind of have a good idea on those, but they don't know for how long and to what size juveniles, because...
How long and to what size they do what? Dance the Fandango?
No, to do
shots of fireball at the local pub?
Right, to grow up.
Okay.
You know, because there's two grouper in the entire state of Florida that require the estuaries and the mangroves to survive.
And drum roll, please. Those grouper are...
Gag grouper and Goliath grouper. All okay. of your other species grow up offshore. You know, they're born offshore and they stay offshore, but those two fish need the mangroves. They need that fresh water to an extent. So right. they don't know for how long they stay up in the rivers and how far up into those rivers they go.
So they're trying to put these sonic tags on them, and they've got the listening post that every time the fish would swim by, it marks it off that fish swam by there. And they've got those way up the Peace River and all the way out into the Gulf.
Yeah.
Dozens of stations around.
And they're utilized by a lot of different scientists because they do them to study all sorts of fish.
You said you caught one. Where did you catch it? How did that happen?
We actually caught that particular one on the Alligator Creek Reef. I kind of came up with the idea that we're at the tail end of the rainy season. A lot of the fish that do leave the rivers because of too much fresh water move out there to the Alligator Creek Reef and concentrate there for a while, and then slowly work their way back into the river systems and into the canal systems. So I just thought it was a good centralized starting
point. How big was the fish?
12 pounds.
And they cut the fish open, and they insert this metal tube that has a transponder in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it transponds out a signal, and it's a four-digit signal. It's like 4662 or something. And so every time that... There we go.
Nice.
Okay,
like
transponders.
It.
There we go.
Perfect.
I think our producer's getting into this. I'm like, what the heck was that?
All
right. Anyway, perked me right up. I'm like, attack. Duck and cover. Get under the bench. All right. So it goes, they're putting in this metal tag, and it's battery powered. How long will that one last? Still sending out a signal.
That particular one, because it was a little bit bigger one, it'll last up to 10 years.
So that's a lot of data for them.
A whole lot of data.
All right. Now, getting back into some of the fishing now, what's going on like along the ICW up in, let's say, from Placida up to Venice along the ICW? Anything?
Pretty good. The Pompano are kind of scattered, like we were talking about, all over the place. So getting good reports of pompano, getting a lot of good reports of flounder cruising up and down in there. I had quite a few guys in this week looking to go gig them because it's one of the few species you can gig. So that tells me when I've got at least a half a dozen guys in a couple-day period looking for flounder gigs, tells me that they're starting to see a lot of flounder out there. And the water is getting very, very clear. That cold front did a really nice job of killing some of the surface algae. And then the rain also backing off has made it pretty good visibility.
All right.
A lot of snook moving in through the passes and off the beaches, so that along the intercoastal you're seeing all right. groups of fish.
In Venice, up in the jetties, what's going on in the jetties itself? I've heard a little bit of snook, but are the pompano catchable?
They've been more on the beach, but not in the pass itself. But the Spanish mackerel have been moving in and out of there on the incoming tide, it seems like. They're following that incoming tide, so guys are having a good hour or two of some Spanish mackerel, some mangrove snapper, snook at night, and even some juvenile tarpon.
Okay, now let's go down to Stump Pass from there, because that's the next opening.
Yeah.
Let's take Stump Pass, for instance. What's going on at Stump Pass?
Stump Pass has been a little quiet. The actual pass itself got filled in by Irma a little bit. It really, that little...
Oh, yeah, they really screwed
that
up.
That jetty they built out they, there, the tongue or...
They were intercoursing the canine putting that jetty up. I mean, oh, my God. In order for a jetty to work, it's got to be 3 to 4 feet above the water, and it's got to be solid, have a good base, and extend out far enough. Right. And the sand just washed right over the top of that one. It's already filling in the pass, and they have a jetty that's supposed to keep it from filling in the pass.
And they just finished it. That's the sad part, is that they spent all that money and time, and it lasted, what, 2 months before?
The pass is already starting to fill in.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, jetties have to be above the water, boys and girls, to work. They don't work under the water. The sand just goes there and goes right over the top of it and goes the other side. Yeah. I mean, water's water. It doesn't matter if it's on the bottom or the top. It's moving that sand around.
Yeah.
Getting down to Little Gasparilla Pass, I've heard again about the Pompano and Spanish. Anything else going there?
Flounder. Flounder really like to hang along that deep edge on the... that'd be the north side of the pass.
Well, that's the shallow end on the north end. Right, the south
good,
end
but,
is...
But there's a good drop-off there. That huge sandbar comes off and then drops right off pretty hard into that pass, and those flounder like to hang along that because that, the way it drops off so rapidly, it's kind of like the north end of Boca Grande Pass. Same exact concept. It drops off pretty good and creates a washboard kind of bottom, and they like to hang on the side there, almost hanging... halfway vertical, I guess, up that sandbar pointed upwards as the bait gets dragged over, because there's almost always a riptide going across from north to south across that flat, and it drags that food source over it, whether it's shrimp, crabs, or bait fish, and they're ready to ambush it as they're facing up the hill.
Okay, now going down to Boca Grande Pass, Boca's got quite a bit of fish in it, and I'm hearing some pretty good things. There's a bunch of little sardine-looking things there. They're what, 100, 200 pounds?
Yeah, tarpon.
Oh, that's what they're called, tarpon, yes. Yeah. You don't think about tarpon in Boca Grande Pass in November, but they're there.
Absolutely, and it's nice that people don't think about them, because the ones that really want to go tarpon them actually can. There's actually fishable numbers of tarpon in there from 50 pounds up to 150-pound fish in there. And probably one of the easiest ways to catch them is to almost vertical jig or live bait fish, not vertical jig with the jig that they talk about and get upset about, but you're fishing with a grouper rig and doing a controlled drift live bait wet wise, but they also catch them on the swim baits. You know, you just fish those swim baits the same as you would a live bait, just fishing it straight up and down, slowly dragging it across there.
Right, so good fishable numbers of tarpon in Boca Grande Pass right now. We've also got some snook, a lot of Spanish mackerel going out. Pompano as kind of in and out through the pass. They're not hanging out long, but if you and them show up at the same time, it's a lot of fun and very tasty. Flounder there again.
Guys are even trolling through there and catching king mackerel, Spanish mackerel, and a couple guys have hooked tarpon while trolling through there with the big plugs that they're trolling for the king mackerel with.
So king mackerel, that's a great thing. When they actually come into that Boca Grande Pass area, and from the channel markers all the way in through past the ICW up under the hill, those king mackerel run through that whole area.
Yeah.
And they're a blast in there. That's fun. And you could do it out of a 12-foot aluminum boat, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, but you could. I mean, you know, you could get out there. The smallest boat I've ever been in out there was 8 foot. So,
yeah, I've been out there in a 10-foot.
But I was very young at the time.
I wasn't that young where I shouldn't have been out there. I knew a lot better, but the guys I was with were young enough and dumb enough.
No, I knew better, but I was just stupid. So, you know, what the heck. But I lived.
Yeah.
All right. Going down Captiva Pass. What's going on Captiva Pass?
Captiva Pass, kind of the same thing as Boca Grande, except for I am hearing of... a few whiting down there, but mostly on the Cayo Costa side. And then also I've heard of a couple legal-sized gag grouper that have been pulled up out of there while the guys were actually drifting through there looking for the snook on the south side.
right. So one more pass, then we're going to fall into something else. What about Redfish Pass?
Redfish Pass, honestly, I haven't heard a thing about it.
Okay, good. We can stop there. All right, it's getting a bit south for our broadcast anyway. But anything worth talking about at Ponarasa just because we're almost there?
The Fort Myers Boat Show next weekend.
Ah, the Fort Myers Boat Show. Yes, indeed. If you want to meet us in person, half live, half dead, we will be there. That is the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Fort Myers Boat Show. The biggest boat show, I mean, if you're
on
only,
Southwest Florida.
Yeah, if you're going to attend one boat show this year, it should be this one. We're there all 4 days, big tent set up. We got seminars going on all day. We've got factory reps there. We've got specials going all day. And we're going to do Amazon price matching on pen reels and Akuma reels. Fort Myers Boat Show, Amazon price matching on pen reels and Akuma reels. And just so you know, you're listening to WKDW Radio 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. Yes, okay.
In Northport, Florida.
In Northport, Florida? Yes. Our studio audience loves this. It's a great station. You got to stop by, say hi to some of the folks. The Common Greens, I think, is the name of the
place. Grounds.
Grounds.
Common Grounds.
The sign's green. I was close.
Yeah, but greens are what you have for dinner.
Well, they also, you play golf on them.
That's true. That's true. Know. We won't be playing any golf next
English
door.
English is a tough language.
It is.
You could lead there or be led there, but if you took led with you, that's different than leading somebody. So, anyway.
If you would like
all
to make a call, please hang up and try again.
Yes. All right. WKDW Radio or listen to KDWRadio.com. Click the Listen Now button, because if you're going to do that, you probably know about it. And you can donate there. Donate a couple bucks. Keep the radio station going. This is literally, on one hand, the craziest radio station I've ever been involved with, and on the other hand, the best radio station I've ever been involved with. Absolutely amazing broadcast group. So getting back into this, Sheephead. We're hearing out in the Gulf. Sorry for saying Sheephead. It kind of got my attention. But if you're going to go out and walk out to the beach, this should be a nice weekend to go to the beach.
Oh, it should be beautiful.
This should be beautiful out at the beach. You know, reasonable temperatures, warm enough where you're going to get just enough sunburn so that you can say, I went to the beach. But if you take a fishing pole with you, if you're standing on the beach, what are you likely to catch there, Robert?
Once again, mostly pompano and flounder with quite a few snook out there. Hearing some reports of some guys seeing a few sheep's head cruising along the shoreline. There's been a lot of jacks and even a couple Spanish mackerel coming within casting distance of Inglewood Beach, Manasota Beach, and also down by Boca Grande, along the whole stretch of Boca Grande.
Well, let's take a step. Pompano and Jack Crevel, would they eat the same lures?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so they're going to eat the same lures. What would you throw for them?
If I was going to take one lure out to the beach, honestly, it would be those pompano jigs, the little crazy jigs or banana jigs.
All right. They come half ounce, 3/8, quarter. What would you do?
I'm probably going to stick with the 3/8.
All right.
Just in case it's a little windy or just in case I walk to an area where there's a little bit stronger riptide, I like for the pompano and flounder to have it right along the bottom. But for the jacks, I'm just going to rip it and reel it in as quick as I can go, pretty much.
All right. Now, what color would you use?
Pink.
Pink. Now, are you using the pink banana jig, crazy jig, with the teaser on it or without the teaser?
Either one will work. I usually use the one without the teaser just because I get two for the price of one, basically.
All right. I like the one with the teaser. It's one of the few things I spend the extra money, because you can, like you say, it's about the same price for one with the teaser or two without. But I like the one with the teaser on it. I go pink and white. I'm not, for some reason or other, I like the pink and white combination. I don't throw the pink. If instead of the all pink, I go pink and white or yellow and white. Those are the two that I throw on those.
No, that's a good thing. I mean, they all seem to work. It's just a
can you tell who signs the paychecks? He agrees with me a lot. You know, I like that. power, command. I like it. I like it.
Or it could be that you just taught me mostly everything that I know.
Okay. Anyway, so for me, I'm not sure that I'm going to be doing that. I might take a little 08 Rapala OG X-Wrap or the white pink. And I like working that little Rapala X-Wrap for that as far as lures go. Now, going back to bait, we're talking about jacks and pompano. What kind of bait would you put out there?
Shrimp.
Shrimp. Now, bobber.
I can't go wrong with it.
Bobber, sinker on the bottom, or what would you do?
More than likely a sinker on the bottom or a split shot, something to get it down closer to the bottom where I can lightly drag it or just lightly hop it off the bottom.
All right, I'm going to go for, I want sand fleas, if I can find them out there. I'm going
to
take the sand free rake.
It's so hard in some of those places. That's
I'll take a bag of frozen shrimp with me, and I'll just peel off some of the shrimp tails. I'll thread the peeled shrimp tail over the hook and use that till I can find the sand fleas. But usually if you dig right next to the where the water laps the beach, problem is they've been doing the beach renourishment, blowing sand up there, and it takes a while for the sand fleas to actually get back out to where the water is. But I prefer the sand fleas. Shrimp will be in my number two, so I'd be good with that.
Yeah, I like the sand fleas too. You know, I mean, they're great, awesome bait. Just certain spots on the beach, you just sometimes gets frustrating, and I have to walk in 200 yards above the area that I actually want to fish.
Well, I check right where I'm at. If I don't find them there, I just use what I have with me. I'm not walking a half a mile down the beach to go get sand fleas. They're either there or they're not, but I'll take the rake with me and try for it. This can be my first choice. Getting out a little further in the Gulf, if you get out, I mean, you don't have to be far. You can start looking in 15 feet of water, which is literally you can throw a stone off the beach that far. You can cast out that far. Spanish mackerel tarpon from there out to probably, 15 miles out?
Yeah, Spanish mackerel and the king mackerel.
Spanish mackerel and king mackerel. I mean, they could be right in the passes, within casting distance. It's really hard to get them off the beach. They're just out a little too far for that. But any boat, and you can just troll along that, or drift with baits out.
Yeah.
Now, how would you drift with bait?
Honestly, I'm going to probably try, I'm always going to take frozen bait with me just because, I mean, that's your fresh bait insurance.
Right. What kind of frozen bait would you take?
I would take ladyfish and mullet both with me. The mullet are spawning a little bit, and some went out along the beach, so some of those fish are going to be focused on mullet. But ladyfish are always out there too, so.
Gotcha. So now you're going to put out a chunk of ladyfish, and let's picture you have a ladyfish laying in front of you, and you put your fingers on it, 1, 2, 3, 4 fingers to get the width of the chunk of bait, considering you're cutting it all the way through getting a chunk of bait out of there. You're using 1 finger, 2, 3, 4?
Well, for the king mackerel, honestly.
For the Spanish and kings.
For the kings, I'm going to use the whole ladyfish.
You put the whole ladyfish out there.
I'm going to put the whole ladyfish on there and put a stinger rig on it and just let it slowly drift or troll it along.
Now,
almost like a ballyhoo kind of situation.
I'm the other way. I use about a half of one at a time.
Yeah, and a lot of guys have great success with that.
You like the whole live one?
Yeah, when I'm up
or the whole dead one or the whole live one.
When I'm closer to the beach within that, you know, that 15 to 30 feet of water,
right.
Usually you're fishing for 1 to 2 fish all day, but it's going to be a big fish. It's going to be one of those big solitary females that are in that 30 to 40 pound range. So I like having that big bait just to entice them and have a better shot at it. But if I move out there to one of the say
now with that big bait, are you putting in on a bobber?
Or
are you freelining it? What are you doing?
I'm going to freeline it usually. It depends on the speed of the drift. If it's a very slow drift and it's sinking right to the bottom, yeah, I'm going to put a bobber on it.
All right, now, if I put a float on it, what I'm doing is, if I'm in 15 feet of water, I'm going to want it about 7 foot down.
Yeah.
So I can't cast it, so I just put my bait down where I think it should be, put my bobber on, set it over the side of the boat, and either drift or idle away from the bait with the bail open, letting the line go out till I get it far enough away, then I'll shut down. What do you do?
I'm exactly what you just said.
Okay.
That's the easiest, best way to do it.
So, no discourse here. Right here at WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM, we agree. When the line is so long, from the bobber down to the hook, you can't cast it. Just toss it in water and get away from it. Real community radio thinks this is a good thing.
That's a benefit of being in a boat.
Okay.
You know, if you're in a boat, you can move. You know,
exactly.
If you're stuck from shore, it's kind of hard, but with a boat, you'd make the best of all your tools.
Now, is the bottom fishing like at Novak, Tremblay, M16, all these near reefs? How's the bottom fishing right now?
We're starting to pick up really good. They're catching a lot of grunts, some nice porgies. The mangrove snappers are a little bit smaller at those near shore reefs within, you know, say 7 miles. But from, say, 10 to 20 miles, now you get into the lanes, the mangrove snapper that are much larger. But those near shore reefs have got some sheep's heads starting to show up on those and cooperate. A few flounder. They have been getting some cobia. There's even been a couple guys seeing a few permit out there on some of those really close to shore reefs.
All right. Now, if I'm out there and I see a cobia or a permit, I'm going to free line a bait out to them. That would be my particular thing. How about you?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And by free lining, all we're talking about is the line, maybe a swivel, some leader, or line to line, and a hook with a bait on it. And what that does is try and present it as natural as possible. And thing is, you don't cast it out, close the bail. You got to allow it to drift along with the current, the tide, allowing it to slowly go down in the water. You don't want it to sink fast. You don't want it to float. You want it to get all the way down there. Now, once I feel my bait's been on the bottom for, you know, a minute or so, I'm starting to reel it back up and then pitch it back out again. Now, I don't have the patience for sitting with it on the bottom when I'm freelining.
No, neither do I.
So, about the same page again?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. All right. And that's going to be especially for those permit, because they'll move up and down in the water column versus usually if I'm going to throw it a cobia, it's because I saw them.
All right,
I usually don't have the patience to wait for them. Once they disappear, I kind of try to forget about them, except for maybe put a bait right out the back of the boat, right 2 feet underneath the boat, waiting to see if he maybe disappeared, then came up to settle up underneath the boat waiting for some food.
All right, now, one of the things that's going on, and it's that time of year, I don't know, are the stone crab traps out there yet?
Yeah.
So
they finally just started producing, too, because the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks of opening season, the guys were starving to death. Their numbers were down by like 75%.
Wow. Stone crabs mean triple tail. The bait there, the crab trap buoys provide shade, and triple tail love to hang out in there. Have we heard about anything? I mean, the first 2 weeks were really slow on the crabs. How are they doing in triple tail?
First couple of weeks were slow on the triple tail, but just this last week they've started to pick up. Mike Myers and his wife went out and caught a couple of nice ones this past week. I've had several customers that have gone out this week and caught them. Guys are literally getting them from Sarasota Bay. I mean, pretty much the whole coast of Florida, but the good reports I've gotten have been from just from south of Sarasota Bay all the way down to just right around Sanibel. I haven't had much reports south of Sanibel, but I had one guy that was fishing Sarasota Bay that was just in the other day to buy some lures, and he said they saw probably 25 of them. Most of them were small, but he saw several fish that were in the 10 to 15 pound range, managed to catch two that were in the 6 to 8 pound range.
Okay. So, just there's so many things going on. I got to tell you, boys and girls, in the last few days, my sidewalks have collapsed. Now I got to find out. I have all this railroad tie terracing. I'm started this morning ripping all those railroad ties out of there, and then working on the house, finding out that, you know, all that stuff was termite infested, and finally got all that ripped out. And I mean, it's just one thing after another. And then
All this started because of little petty things that happened from Irma.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the start of all of it. It kind of opened up the box a little bit and find out all
and
these
it's just been
problems.
And last night, I get a, you know, we're at Luigi's. There are a few seats open tonight if you want to get in on the fishing club tonight. We've got, I think, 6 chairs left that you can get to. We're doing where we caught fish, what kind of fish we caught, showing all the slides, pictures, all that kind of stuff. But we're at Luigi's, and just about 5 minutes after the store closed, the alarms go off.
At the store,
the alarms go off. So I didn't have my keys with me because we're up at Luigi's doing the talk. So Robert goes down to the shop to see if somebody's breaking in or not or what happened. And he gets down there, doesn't have his keys, so he's got to call Austin. There's cops all over the place. Anyway, nothing. And then it was about an hour later, hour and a half later, the alarm went off again. Go back down there and look. Still nothing. And then at 1 o'clock this morning, they called me and alarms were going off. I think I got about 3 hours worth of sleep last night. It's just, oh, I'm so cheerful. You know, joys of owning your own business. I mean, it's amazing. I don't really know what else I would like to do, but it was, you know, just to give you this whole idea about, oh, you own your own business and you can just kind of fishing and do all that.
Do anything you want, whenever you want.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Wake up in the middle of the night when the alarms are going off because, I mean, I don't know, a bug could have crawled. I think it was a lizard crawled over the sensor myself. But anyway, in Pine Island Sound, I've been hearing about some nice fish down around Pine Island Sound. And if you're going down, you want to fish off the inside of Sanibel there. They got a real pretty causeway there, and you can go fishing in there. Liable to catch, again, into some a little bit of pompano. But up on the Sound, is the trout down there bigger now?
Yeah. Yeah, the trout seem to be a little bit more on the larger side. The quantity is still not there, but the quality is definitely improved. The guys that are catching the bigger ones are mostly drifting with small pinfish or pigfish, which is the same pretty much animal as a pinfish. Yeah, they do. They make a lot of noise. They look like a pinfish.
That's exactly it. The pigfish. Hogfish are completely different than pigfish, believe it or not. So I don't know how they get one as a hogfish and one as a pigfish, but
And they call it a snapper when it's really not even in the snapper family.
Right. So anyway, heard some big trout down there. On the flats right now, the tandem rigs are really making a kind of a comeback. The old, what Love Lure originally started years ago with two curl tail jigs tied together, each on their own separate line, but tied together at the top. It creates a chasing action when you jig it and reel it in at a kind of a slow, moderate retrieve. And lifting the rod tip, let the rod tip drop. Lift the rod tip, let the rod tip drop. All the while reeling. And what happens is it makes it look like it's being chased out of the grass. As it goes up into the water, as you're lifting your rod tip, lift again, chases up a little higher. As you drop your rod tip, it allows the jigs to fall down, going towards the bottom, making it look like that bait's going to go back and hide in the grass. And this is... It took a real lull for a couple of years. People weren't doing it. But, boy, I bet you I've had 10 questions in the last 3 days working at the store about tandem rigs, Love Lures. Love Lures out of business. We sell mostly now the DOA one. There is a couple other ones, but I like the DOA one the best.
Yeah.
What about you?
I agree with that. You know, it's a very good replica of the other one, but yet with his own little twist on it. You know, it's super productive. I like it just because of the varieties of fish that you can catch on it. Everyone kind of associates it with trout fishing, but I've caught mangrove snapper, I've caught cobia, I've caught a lot of snook, I've even caught a few redfish using a tandem rig.
Yeah, ladyfish, pompano, Spanish mackerel, I mean, you name it, the list goes on and on. If it eats fish, it wants to try and eat that thing.
Right.
So, and they're like $2-3, and you get it, and you see the two jigs in the package, and you think you're buying two jigs. It's not. It's one lure consisting of two jigs tied together. And again, I like the pink, I like the white, but I also like the brown, the root beer. Now that one, I think pink would be my favorite, and then, I don't know, it'd be a toss-up between the root beer and the white, which one I would go to.
Yeah, I'd be torn on all three of those. I mean, they're super consistent colors. The chartreuse is pretty good too at times for me.
I forgot about that. I don't really fish a lot of chartreuse.
The clear water is the only time I ever really mess with chartreuse, and I still don't fish it that much, but that's why I always kind of forget about it. But with the tandem lures, I try to remember that one in the arsenal.
All right, I'm sitting there, Robert's talking, I'm shaking my head, agreeing with him. Oh, boy, it's a good thing we're doing radio so you can see what I'm doing. Always nice when that all comes up like that. All right, let's see. Kind of going through the notes here, figuring out if we forgot to cover anything. Oh, yes, we did. What? Go ahead.
What? Time.
Yeah, we have a clock there.
Yeah, I can see hands.
It's the one with the little minute hand that goes around. It's got the little faster one that sweeps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Clockwise.
I'm, you know, these guys know I'm an idiot. They're both trying to tell me, Frank, this is how much time you got left. You know, it's like, you know, they know I just prattle on. Anyway, but what we forgot to talk about, bass fishing. What's going on right now, bass fishing?
Bass fishing's been really good. A lot of guys been coming in buying shiners this whole week. The soft plastic bite kind of slowed down a little bit, and I think it's because that water temperature dropped a little bit that the guys got just excited about being able to play around with shiners. They're catching them in the Rotunda Lake, you know, the little ponds back there in Rotunda.
Rotunda, yeah.
Their canal systems. Guys have been catching them up a little bit way up above Snook Haven up there on the Myakka. There's been two guys in this week that have been fishing up there a little bit. They've been catching some nice snook on their shiners up there, yeah, too.
I can tell you Prairie Creek isn't doing much. Shell Creek above the dam is doing okay. There is some bass being caught up there in some of the bends. If you get north of Hathaway, you're going to run into more bluegill, crappie on Shell Creek. Now, Prairie Creek, I don't really have any reports from. I'm assuming the crappie fishing would be okay.
One gentleman was in the other day. He's doing some pretty good bass fishing over there. He's the bass only one that has been buying some artificials, and he's fishing Prairie Creek. He lives right on it, so he fishes it a lot. But he's the only one I've talked to this week that is actually catching bass on the soft plastics.
All right, now, crappie fishing with this cold weather, everybody was buying minnows. I mean, we were going through tons of minnows, pencil bobbers, quill bobbers, all that kind of stuff. Everybody was out there testing the crappie thing. What's going on crappie-wise?
It started to slow down a little bit because the water temperature kind of came back up. Some of the guys that are really bound and determined, you know, like Teddy, he kind of has them patterned. He'll catch them even in August. You know, those guys who do it religiously, they're still catching them, but if you're just going out there blindly right now, it's slowed down a little bit in some of the canals.
Okay. Now, one thing about crappie fishing is you can do it with jigs, you can do it with bait, you can do it with small lures. When I'm looking for fish at this time of year and trying to find out where the crappie are, I take the tiny trap from Rattle Trap. It's a little teeny tiny rattle trap. And I toss it out. I like the pinfish color, even though I know it's not supposed to be a crappie color. Or I'll do the orange and brown. But even the black and silver one's pretty good. I think standard black and silver one's pretty good. But cast it out and just slowly, slowly, you know, just so it swims nice, reel it along a shoreline. And you're probably not going to hook a crappie on it, but you're going to feel this tap, tap, tap of them hitting that lure a couple times. Every once in a while, I'll get a nice hookup. But more often, I feel the taps, and then I can throw a bobber in that area with a minnow on it and actually see if there's crappie there.
Right.
But
and especially if you concentrate around those pepper trees.
Yeah.
So you get a good, good, heavy pepper tree along the edge of that is more ideal places to cast.
Yeah, looking and searching for them, I've done really good with that rattle trap trying to figure out where the crappie are, mostly by the tap, tap, tap on the lure. So you really got to kind of pay attention. I don't do any jigging or jerking with it, just a very slow, more slow than moderate on the retrieving, just to keep it swimming. I want it rattling lightly, but not overwhelmingly, because it can spook the crappie off if you get it going too fast. Mayan cichlids, tilapia, another staple here in the freshwater. And I want to touch a little bit on catfish. We only got a couple minutes here. What about catfish and Mayan cichlids and stuff?
Yeah, a lot of guys are catching those bullheads out there, and they're doing pretty well on them. They're catching them on night crawlers on the bottom or just the standard catfish stink baits. And then, of course, you got the Mayan cichlids. And the tilapia have been actually cooperating pretty well on the crappie minnows. You know, those crappie minnows out there, you know, if you're not catching the crappie, usually you're going to, at least your bycatch is either going to be a really giant bluegill or a Mayan cichlid.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, they're an awesome eating fish. The tilapia is good eating. People make a lot of money selling them to you. I mean, they're like $6 to $9 a pound in the grocery store.
Yeah.
And I would say Mayan cichlid's actually a tastier fish. I do like bluegill, but I'm a bit nostalgic. If I eat bluegill, I want it to be a campfire. I want a sharp stick. I slab off the flay. I don't, you know, like flay them out fully. I just slab the meat off, hang the back of the skin on a stick, and stick it over a campfire, preferably with a little bit of hickory or oak wood in it that smokes them up nice on the side of the campfire. That's what I grew up fishing. I had a golden retriever, double barrel shotgun, my fishing pole, and I would go spend a day or two down there. I'm amazed I'm not dead because I drank from the creek and, you know, ate birds and fish and everything that, you know, I caught or shot myself. And, you know, but I was old enough. I was 11. You know, I mean.
Yeah, that was a great time to be around.
Right. I can understand why these 18-year-old kids in college have a hard time and get stressed over stuff.
Yeah. It didn't come in a paper bag, what?
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we won't go there right now because I really don't get me ranting. And
No ranting.
I'm being good boy. If you want to meet us live and half dead in person at Luigi's tonight, 6:30 to 8 at Luigi's, call 941-625-3888. That's Fish and Frank's, 941-625-3888. Reserve your seats. I think there's 6 or 8 chairs left for tonight's meeting. Robert and I will both be there along with Captain Cale and Captain Carl. I'll be talking about where we caught fish. And but Fort Myers Boat Show coming up next week. We won't be here. We'll be at the boat show, but come down and see us at the Fort Myers Boat Show, the 16th, 19th.
And you're listening to KDW.
KDW 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio out of Northport, Florida. This is FM. I got to tell you, this is an awesome place to do a show out of. If you guys get a chance, stop by their studio, say hi. RJ, what's the name of the room next door?
Common Grounds.
Common Grounds. Common Grounds?
Common Grounds.
All right, Common Ground. All right, stop by. It's the coolest bring-your-own-BY thing.